This fall, the Food and Drug Administration is banning a Cipro-like antibiotic called enrofloxacin, which is marketed as Baytril, banning it from being fed to chickens and poultry. As much as 70% of all antibiotics in the U.S. are used on animals to prevent illness, not to treat it. Farmers have been giving Baytril to their chickens and ducks to treat and prevent respiratory infections caused by bacteria. Baytril clears up those bacteria, but it also promotes the growth of Campylobacter bacteria, which live in the bird's intestines without making them sick. And once those bugs are on your plate or in your roast chicken or your turkey sandwich, they can cause food poisoning with complications like arthritis and blood infections. Right now, more than 21% of those infections will not clear up with antibiotics. My guest, Dr. Stuart Levy, has campaigned against the overuse of antibiotics for more than 30 years. And with the FDA's new ban, he is getting a taste of victory. Dr. Levy is professor of medicine and of molecular biology and microbiology at Tufts University School of Medicine, where he is director of the Center for Adaptation, Genetics, and Drug Resistance. He's also the president of the Alliance for the Prudent Use of Antibiotics, a nonprofit scientific organization. And he's written the book, The Antibiotics Paradox, now out in paperback. And he's joining us today from his office at Tufts. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Levy.
Thank you, Ira. It's delightful to be back.
You must be feeling pretty good about this.
Well, I was talking to someone the other day to realize that 30 years ago, 1975, we did our first study on a chicken. Well, we created the chicken farm outside of Boston in Sherbourne, Mass., to look at this important issue of the impact of antibiotic use in animals on the environment and on people itself.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think it's taken 30 years? And now, what happened at the FDA now that they've listened after 30 years?
Well, I think more people have come around to realizing that antibiotics used anywhere, whether it's in beekeeping, whether it's in aquaculture, wherever, forms a general environmental pool of antibiotics and the resultant killing of susceptible strains of bacteria and the emergence of those that are resistant. And those resistant bacteria don't stay in that one environment, whether it's the farm or the hospital. It moves out. They move out. And so any use of an antibiotic will cause an increase in this pool of resistant bacteria, which are constantly a threat to our human health and our ability to treat.
And how many chickens and geese and fowl we eat are treated with antibiotics?
Oh, well, I would say for the moment all of the domestic animals that we are currently eating, outside of maybe some that are raised naturally, but the 95% are receiving antibiotics at some time during their period of growth.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any part in playing convincing the FDA to ban Baytril?
Well, I certainly testified and wrote, along with the Center for Veterinary Medicine of the FDA, that really championed this. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a very, very big step, Ira. I mean, you've been aware of this issue for the number of years we've known each other, and This is the first time the FDA has actually been able to step in and make a decision of this kind.
You know, that's why I say I wonder, and knowing how Washington works and lobbying and whatever and politics and you name it, why suddenly, what was the tipping point here?
I think there are many points. One is that we're dealing with a drug, ciprofloxacin, which is critically important to our treatment of severe infections in people. I realized that it got a big publicity hit when it was used for or put on the reserve for treatment of anthrax attacks back in 2001. But basically, it's a drug we rely on and that family. And this drug, which was being used in chickens, was creating bacteria resistant to this drug, and not just an infectious bacteria, but other bacteria that could then join the pool of resistant strains that people have contact with. So I think that was one point. I think secondly is that we're in a state, really a crisis here, where we're at a loss to find new antibiotics. Few antibiotics are coming down the road, few that would treat a broad number of bacteria. And I think that any way that we can stop the selection of these resistant strains, the better. And I think This was the timing. And many of the large pharmaceutical companies have left the discovery field.
1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Talking with Stuart Levy, who's been campaigning for many years to get a ban on the overuse of antibiotics. You say that that they have left. No one is taking the place, and no one is really taking the place of companies that are no longer looking for antibiotics?
No. Well, the large pharmaceutical companies, there's a handful left. Two things have happened. One, many of the large companies have merged into one, so three discovery programs are now one. And then what's harder to accept is that that one may decide that infectious disease area is not one they want to be in. Treatments are shorter, they're not prolonged, one isn't assured of a $1 billion drug. So that void has been filled by smaller pharmaceutical or biopharmaceutical companies. I, as you know, started one myself to resurrect and form a renaissance of tetracyclines that we call Paratek Pharmaceuticals, and we actually have a new tetracycline in phase one at the moment.
Mm-hmm. What about further bannings of other antibiotics or for other animals? Anything
on
the horizon?
Well, I think the next step, Ira, is to eliminate the use of antibiotics for a purpose which is not therapeutic, what we call non-therapeutic, and this is growth promotion. And that's the studies we did originally on the farm 30 years ago, because these are the use of an antibiotic laced into the feed of these animals, not to treat a disease, but to help them grow. And we now know that that probably is not how they work. They probably are treating some underlying indolent disease process, and the animals are just being raised a little better. But this process began in the late 50s when raising of animals was not under the same conditions we are now. And quite honestly, we don't need this anymore. And the European Union has banned this use, and I think we're lagging behind.
Mm-hmm. Are there any legislation in Congress to ban it totally?
Yes. I think it's delightful. Senator Kennedy and Snow have a bill before Congress they introduced in April, which they call the Preservation of Antibiotics for Medical Treatment Act. And it's quite a good bill because it not only says, you know, come on, let's stop this non-therapeutic use, but also offers help to farmers. And actually what I thought was terrific was to put money aside for research, because no one has really demonstrated how these antibiotics worked at less than their therapeutic amounts in improving growth.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255. Let's head out to Minneapolis. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi.
Go ahead, Sue.
I'm a small animal veterinarian, and I guess I haven't heard anything about this because I don't work with poultry, but I just want to make sure that you're not saying Baitrol is going to be, you know, stop being manufactured. You're just saying that it's not going to be used in poultry, correct?
That is correct.
It's part of your armory, is it not?
Oh, it's one of our hardcore. Yeah, we save it.
Well, you see, you're using it in animals for hardcore difficult infections, like we are in people. And I think that what the FDA was saying was, look, this use in the raising of animals, chickens in this regard, was not essential. And what it was doing was creating an environment of resistant infection, some of harm, great harm to people. And I think would eventually and could eventually affect your use for small animals.
Well, exactly. Now, what about things that are already not used a lot in human medicine, like tetracycline? Will they still be able to use older antibiotics?
For the moment, of course, they need for therapy. But I think what's coming under challenge, as we talked earlier, is the use of some of these valuable antibiotics in subtherapy, that is, not for treatment of disease, but for this kind of nonspecific growth promotion,
right,
which has yet to be proven to be still a feature, and I think it is not, and European Union has deemed it so, and animals are raised over there without it.
Great. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
1-800-989-8255. So what happens, the Baitrol is put into the feeding, into the water of the chickens?
It can be done, yes. And what happens, and this is what's interesting, and I think this is where we need new research, is how do you deliver the antibiotic? What the Alliance for Prudent Use of Antibiotics demonstrated in a report 3 years ago now already, is that the drug enters the environment. I mean, it just doesn't go into the chickens or into other animals, but enters them. Whatever they excrete is put on the farm fields, but also the water goes out into the rest of the farm and leaches down into different areas. So there is a clear environmental contamination at the same time as the antibiotics being delivered for so-called treatment. It's not contained.
And it gets in even into our drinking water, does it?
Well, I don't know that we can say anything about where it's coming from, but certainly there have been studies throughout the United States and Europe demonstrating antibiotics in drinking water. I would suspect that's could be coming from any use, people,
right.
Animals, but no one knows where.
Hey, and you're also talking about, over the years, not just over-prescription in animals, also in doctors' offices, too.
Well, I think the important point that you've helped me with is to get the message out that antibiotics are not, you know, aspirins or chocolates. I mean, you don't take them for whatever ails you. They have a defined use, that is, to treat a bacterial infection. And clearly, there are the majority of diseases in people are resistant because of misuse in people. And so we don't want to just point our fingers at agriculture and say, you're the ones that are causing our problem. They are a contributor, but a major contributor is misuse in the home.
Mm-hmm. And then we start seeing these superbugs.
Yep, the superbugs that are resistant to almost everything we have, and now with a paucity of new drugs in the pipeline, we're really in a crisis mode to treat the kinds of bacteria that some of our patients are facing.
What is the prognosis for these superbugs? Are we going to run out of an antibiotic someday, and we'll be back in the Middle Ages where, you know, we don't have anything to treat people with?
That's always the scenario that looks more and more probable, though we don't want to say it could. I mean, we have to avoid it, but with large pharma leaving the discovery field, it's really into the small biopharmaceutical companies come up with answers. For the so-called infections of we call gram-positive bacteria, the staphylococcus, the pneumococcus, there are new drugs coming forth. But for the kinds of bacteria that ciprofloxacin was treating and is treating, the gram-negative types, just these new extended tetracyclines that I mentioned earlier that Paratek is working on and Wyeth has put out, they're the only gram-negative agents, and there are very few others, if any, in the pipeline.
Tell us about what the tetracycline does that differently and why that has
the
been improved.
The new tetracyclines, certainly the one we're using, is unaffected by the antibiotic resistance mechanisms that are currently out there. And since tetracyclines have been out for over 50 years, we think we've seen every kind of resistance that could come. And the new product is unaffected. And it's unaffected by tetracycline resistance mechanisms. It's unaffected by resistance to any other drug because all these resistances are honed in on that particular family. So this is truly a novel and exciting new renaissance for these drugs, which haven't really been touched since the 1970s with the discovery of doxycycline and minocycline. So it's new drugs to come out, and I think that they will want to be used wisely and prudently, but they will answer the question of what do we have next? But they're a while out there. They're only, in our case, in phase one, and the other drug is out as an intravenous therapy for hospitals. Mm.
Talking with Dr. Stuart Levy, who is author of The Antibiotic Paradox and also president of the Alliance for the Prudent Use of Antibiotics, on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow, our number 1-800-989-8255. If you'd like to get on the phone, let's see if we can take a phone call or two here. Let's go to David in Kansas. Hi, David.
Hi. Ira, thanks for taking my call. You touched on this already, Dr. Levy. I'm a veterinarian, a small animal veterinarian. I'm well aware of the threshold that it takes to prescribe antibiotics. I have to have a client doctor-patient relationship and obviously an indicated need to prescribe antibiotics, and MDs and DOs also have that same threshold. And so I was wanting to know what your comments were about the maybe non-discriminate use or at least not judicious use of antibiotics in people all the time and their impact on this issue as well.
It's a critically important reason. In fact, I would say it is the major reason, and the Alliance for Prudent Use of Antibiotics was created to deal with that very issue, and that is the misuse of antibiotics, the overuse, the use for viruses when they don't work.
Is there more than just yelling and screaming at the doctors that can be done? Is there any regulatory or pressure or whatever that you can put on them?
Well, I think it's good practice, and I think the professional societies that are taking a greater interest in how antibiotics are being used and prescribed will help. After all, we judge our doctors by how they adhere to best practice, and until the professional societies really come out with strong guidelines, we often run the risk of a physician being coerced into giving an antibiotic when, in fact, it's not needed. Our goal with the Alliance is to also give the message to the consumer, because if the consumer will accept the fact that the doctor knows best and I'm not going to insist on the antibiotic, then that makes it easier for the doctor to say, you know, this is a cold. You don't need an antibiotic.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for calling. 1-800-999-8255. Let's go to Liz in Overland Park, Kansas. Hi, Liz.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question on the use of things like Purell and all this hand sanitizing antibacterial lotions, and I will take my answer off the air.
Okay. Well, it's funny, Ari, isn't it? This always will come up, and I think it's because antibacterial containing substances have just hit the grocery markets, and I have a feeling that they do contribute, not so much the alcohol base, which is, in fact, not at all, which is Purell's product, but those that contain chemicals, which are left on the sinks and in the sinks in the kitchens. And we've shown in our laboratory that they can select for bacteria, which are resistant not only to these chemicals, but also to antibiotics. So that is clearly another subject,
but the alcohol-based ones are better. You're saying
anything that doesn't leave a residue, alcohol, peroxides, bleaches, we have no problem with that. They act immediately; they don't leave a residue, so bacteria have no chance to really be selected for resistance.
Dr. Levy, we've run out of time. I want to thank you for taking time to talk with us again.
You're welcome, and nice to be with you.
We'll be following this in Congress. Also, Dr. Stuart Levy is author of The Antibiotic Paradox, now out in paperback. He's president of the Alliance for the Prudent Use of Antibiotics. Also, he is the director of the Center for Adaptation Genetics and Drug Resistance at Tufts. We'll be right back after this short break.